A great way to support Daily Thunder is by visiting one of our partners, ShopGood. ShopGood has you covered on all Thunder-related clothing items, including original and hand-printed shirts, hats, and stickers for both adults and kids. Be sure to check out our Thunder Shield tee, which pays homage to Oklahoma's Native American culture and state flag. To view Daily Thunder's entire catalog at ShopGood, visit shopgoodokc.com/daily-thunder. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for supporting Daily Thunder. Welcome back to the Daily Thunder podcast. We just looked it up. August 12th was the last time you heard from us. And I will be completely honest. I have not talked to these guys over what we do, Zoom, since that day. So, boys, welcome back to us. How are we doing?
Doing great. Ready to, shoot, the season's almost here. I think the Thunder don't play till Wednesday. We're recording this Monday night. But there's NBA basketball on tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Yeah, season opens tomorrow. Doubleheader on TNT.
Yeah, and just to be clear, like, we've been chatting in, like, our group chat. It's not like Ryan's like F you guys until the season starts.
I wanted to, but...
Yeah,
no, the group chat has been live, but we have not spent time on a Zoom call in quite a while.
We've been too busy watching Josh Giddey on TikTok and consuming that content to talk to each other.
Exactly. So this is the Daily Thunder season preview, and we've been looking forward to this. Before we get into it, just what have you guys been doing? Like, what shows are you watching? What are you doing to consume your time before we get into this grind?
We all watched Squid Game.
Yep, I finished Squid Game. We probably can't do any spoilers, but I was fascinated for a good four nights. Like I binged it like across four nights, and it was a fun four nights. Man, it was nuts though.
I was told not to binge you and Squid Game in the same week. So Squid Game has been pushed off a few days, but everyone's talking about it. Everyone. I feel so left out. So I will be jumping on Squid Game here pretty soon.
You is on my list as well. I have not started it. I almost started it the other night. So it's kind of one of those shows that's exhausting to watch because you don't really, it's just so stressful. You don't really know who to root for, but like, it seems like the show wants you to root. It's one of, it's complicated.
It's a bit like Breaking Bad. You have no business rooting for the guy you root for.
I rooted for Walter White. Who cares?
Oh, for sure. for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's an anti-hero show though. Yeah.
No doubt. And it is, like you said, very stressful.
Succession premiere last night. Yes. That was good.
I'm a huge Succession fan. I think Succession is the best show on TV right now. And premiere was great. Seasons one and two are great. I'm sure season three is going to be great. Big Succession fan. I'm in the middle of Yellowstone. I'm halfway through season three. I'm not usually big into like Westerns, but this is, I love Tombstone and I love select Westerns, but this is like, it's like Sons of Anarchy meets Succession meets The Sopranos, like on a Montana ranch. It's really
I've heard it's very good. It's ironically, the first person I ever heard mention Yellowstone was Jim Tramer on the radio.
Oh,
that's hilarious.
I walk back everything I just said.
Real quick, you mentioned Succession being the best show on TV. Do you guys watch The Bachelor?
No. My wife does sometimes, but not, I maybe watched an episode a few years ago, but I never got into it.
Wait, was that a serious? I thought that was a joke. Like you said,
it was a joke. I was seriously asking because I do watch it and I really enjoy it, but it is not, it's not the best show on TV. I have gone back through Friday Night Lights and One Tree Hill
since the last time we talked, which is a record for me. It takes forever, but
you've watched Friday Night Lights and One Tree Hill multiple times, and you watched The Bachelor.
Yes. So Friday Night Lights, One Tree Hill is kind of it's kind of a constant rewatch. And yes, The Bachelor is, I was in,
you watched Survivor?
I've never watched Survivor. Not one episode.
We're opposite. Our reality TV taste are opposite here. Cause I love Survivor.
I mean, it seems like it's one of the greats. It's been on forever.
Yeah.
The only reality TV I watch is hosted by Chris Fisher and Michael Cage. That's about it for me.
What a transition.
Seriously. All right. I would like to go back, if we could, to draft night. And I just want to simply ask, are there any regrets? Any regrets? We took, obviously, Josh Giddey at 6, traded 16, and took Trey Mann at 18. Let's just start there. Any regrets?
For me, no regrets whatsoever on Josh Giddey. I didn't have any regrets that night. And preseason play is only, made me feel so much better about the selection. As far as 16 goes, I know that Sengun is the big talking point, and I understand it. I get it. I don't really feel that bad about Sengun. I will say the one thing, Trey Murphy, he's a guy that...
That's where I was going to go, yeah.
It would have been kind of, and of course, hindsight 2020 and all those things, but we all like Trey Murphy and all the pre-draft stuff we did. It would have been really nice to have both Treys, but to have Trey Murphy and Trey Mann. I get it. I get the value of trading the 16 for two future picks and what you can do with those future picks. And once you're picking in the mid-teens, it's all, it's all a shot in the dark anyway, so why not take two shots in the dark instead of one? All that I get. But, man, Trey Murphy looks pretty good. So if I had one regret, it might be that. I still believe in Trey Mann, though. What he's doing, like the shot creation, creating his own space, all those things still look like they're going to translate to the NBA. He just needs to have some shots fall, and they finally started falling. That last preseason game he played in, he looked really good, actually. So I'm still confident in Trey Mann, but Trey Murphy may be the one that got away.
Yeah, I would completely agree with all that. Like I don't think any of us are giving up on Trey Mann. And I'm with him. I think the process is more important than the results. Like he gets to his spots and he has a long track record of being able to shoot the ball. So I think the shots are going to go in, but the problem is that it's his size, right? Like he is not going to be a superstar or even like, I mean, does he even have higher level role player on a winning team upside just because of how his size is going to limit him in certain ways? And like, if you want somebody that can really shoot the ball, Trey Murphy's size profile is just so much easier to work around. So for that reason, I would say, I think if there's any regret at this point, it would be Mann over Murphy, effectively choosing that. To go that route. But Trey Mann could also turn out to be like Lou Williams 2.0 and it work out perfectly fine. And I wouldn't be super shocked.
Yeah. As far as Trey Mann and like size goes, I mean, just like, obviously I'm not comparing him to these guys, but I mean, we've seen like, look at Trey Young, look at Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. There's a bunch of undersized guys who aren't necessarily great defenders, but they're such good shooters and scorers and shot creators. I mean, if that's the mold he's going to go in and he can be like, your sixth man off the bench and create his own shots like that. I mean, I think that's okay. I think that's okay with the 18th pick.
I mean, yeah, it could turn out to be perfectly fine value. You're pretty much any contribution at 18 is probably plus EV, I would imagine.
Right.
It's nitpicky at this point. Ryan, I know you liked both of those guys coming out of the draft a lot. I mean, where are you, have you changed your stance on that?
I think, no, not at all. I think I am I'm surprised that we're not talking about bigs at all. Because I think we were all kind of just trying to decide which big we wanted. Some people liked Sengun, some people liked Kai Jones. Some people liked Garuba, and they were taken elsewhere. I haven't seen anything from them that like made me think like, wow, we totally screwed up. And again, Şengün has played well, and I think that one will be. So there will be certain fans that just hate the fact that we didn't take him, given that he was there and we were on the clock and we traded out of that pick. So, but that thing, I think that's the most surprising thing to me, is that we could look at someone like Trey Murphy and say that might be the guy that we all loved him, but that we aren't talking about the bigs more, because we were convinced that one of those picks was going to be a big guy.
Well, I'm okay with this.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Brent. No, go ahead, Brent.
Oh, I was just going to say, I get the plan. It's very, very apparent what the plan is. The plan is next year's draft is absolutely loaded in bigs. I mean, the Thunder want a top five pick, and if you get a top five pick, you're getting an elite big. And so I'm sure the idea was, yeah, we can roll the dice on a Kai Jones, you know, raw project. We can roll the dice on, you know, some of these other guys, Şengün. They all have issues. Why not get an elite guy? And here's the deal. If you get like a – if you spend a pick on one of those guys, then the next year is kind of clunky because you just spent a first-round pick on another of those guys. Trey Mann, you can fit in anywhere. A guy that can shoot and score and create his own shot. You know, you can start him, come off the bench. You know, I get it. I get it now. They're looking ahead to next year's draft, and that's where they're going to sink their money into getting a big.
Okay, I want to steer the conversation through this lens. Last year, they had to sit Shai for basically the entire second half of the season in an effort to tank, in an effort to lose games. I don't think the plan was to be where they were. I think it was 20-22. Is that correct?
At one point, it was like 19-24 or something. I mean, okay. Shai was actually hurt though, right?
I should clarify.
We should clarify.
I don't mean to sound that cynical, but yes, Shai sat the second half of the season, and it also allowed them to achieve their goal.
Bench Al Horford
I want to talk about the guys on this team and the ones we're really excited about through the lens of, are they bad enough that going into this year, is this team bad enough, or will we have another 6 week injury update on Shai because this team is 15-16 and we've lost the plot again? Is this team bad enough in your eyes?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. One, I mean, is Lu Dort the worst second best player in the league? He's got to be one of the worst three or four, right? I mean, I think we all love Lu Dort, but he's your second best player. That's a disaster. Poku is probably not making like an all-star level leap this year. They don't have a rim protector of any kind. Like Derek Favors is not going to play 32 minutes a night and protect the rim. I don't, you know, the only thing that this team does have, ironically, I think it's shooting. Like Kenrich Williams is a good shooter. You got Ty Jerome you can throw out there. Trey Mann, Poku looks better. Giddy's shot looks pretty good. Shai shot over 40% from three last year. Like they're going to be able to shoot the ball, but I don't know how they defend guys. And speaking to your point of, you know, hypothetically, if they start 15-16, I would invite you to look at the Thunder's schedule for the first few weeks of the season, because that, I mean, let me just run through this. Jazz, that's a loss. At Houston, toss up, right? 76ers, Warriors, Lakers, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers. Those are all losses. Spurs, toss up. Pelicans, probably a loss, but without Zion, we'll see. Kings, probably a loss. Nets, loss. Heat, loss. Rockets, toss up. Bucks, loss. Celtics, loss. Hawks loss, Jazz loss. That brings you through almost the end of November, and there's like three or four wins maybe if things break right. So I think this team is going to start slow, and like, I don't know, Shai could lead the league in scoring this year and be like, you know, a Devin Booker, Bradley Beal type on a bad team and just put up a really efficient season or do something like Zach LaVine's done in the past. But the supporting cast is not there, right? Like, do you guys agree with me?
Well, that sound you hear is someone clipping you running through that schedule and naming all those losses, and they will be coming for you with that clip when they rattle off a couple wins. I totally agree with you, though. It's the schedule is brutal to start, and it definitely lends itself to Oklahoma City kind of finding themselves where they want to be early on. And that is the exact opposite of last year. Last year, they came out, and I think it was what, two possessions in, and we were like, oh yeah, this team is competent. Horford
does so many good winner in the first game.
Yeah. Horford does so many good things. They play defense. Everyone's trying incredibly hard. Everyone's in the right spot. They might not have enough talent on a lot of nights, but it might not matter. This year feels different. I agree with you. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Last year you had Horford and George Hill. Those are two really good bets, especially Horford. He played at a near all-star level last year. He obviously wasn't an all-star level, but near. I mean, he wasn't that far removed from being an all-star. And then George Hill is a really solid player. And then Kenrich Williams, of course, played so well. This year you got Shea, and then, you know, Derek Favors is that bet. Now, Derek Favors is nice, but he's no Al Horford. He's not even close. And there's not a George Hill type player. So I think it'll be enough. Now, Josh Giddey, he's going to mess around and win the Thunder a couple games along with Shea and Dort. I mean, Dort's going to hit like 5 threes in a game, and Giddey's going to get like a triple-double, and Shea's going to score 30 points, and they're going to win a few games here and there. But all that said, when you take out all those bets – and you're playing so many rookies, you're playing so many young guys, you're playing so many undrafted guys, journeymen, things like that. I mean, last year they were very competitive and entertaining. I expect them to be competitive and entertaining this year, but with less wins. And it's purposeful. I mean, they want to add one of those bigs next year. They want to get a blue chip talent next to Shea, Giddey, and Dort. And hopefully Poku as well will be along that. Maybe Bazley improves. He's looked better in the preseason for sure. But yeah, it's not going to be a repeat of last year. I don't think it'll be as bad as the second half of the year all year long, but it's definitely not going to be as good as the first half of the year this year either. And there's going to be less teams that are bad this season too. A lot of those bottom dwellers are getting guys back, or they improved. A lot of teams aren't going to purposely tank. Of course, we thought this too last year, and then injuries happen and teams aren't as good as they thought and things like that. So somewhere along the line, whether it's a month in, 2 months in, some other teams are going to start kind of purposely tanking, and the Thunder won't purposely tank, but the guys that they have right now aren't good enough to win a lot of games just because they're so young. You can't win with too much youth.
I think it's really important that the Thunder smooth out how this happens, right? Like losing 29 of 31 games or whatever it was is not good. I think all of us are in favor of the process and of the tank, quote unquote. You can't do that. You can't lose by 55 to the Bucks or whoever it was that they lost to by 55, 56 points in the last couple weeks of the year. Like that stuff is what turns these rebuilds ugly quickly. They need to go like 21-61 and win like 4 games a month and not lose by more than 30 on any given night. And, you know, Poku does some cool stuff. Giddey is fun. Like, and Chase averages 29 a game. Like, morale will be high at the end of the year. That's the path.
I agree. And it's about seeing the young players develop and improve. And I think we'll see that. And I think you're exactly right. It won't be that bad just because they have Shea and they have Giddey. I mean, you can argue that those will be the two best players this season. I mean, I know it's Lu Dort right now. You could argue Derek Favors or Kenrich Williams, but I wouldn't be surprised. I actually am predicting by the end of the season, Josh Giddey's the second best player on the team. That's how high I am on him. And again, that says something about the team, obviously, but I think it says something about Josh Giddey. That said, when you have Shea as a baseline, you're going to be better than you were the second half of last season. One other thing, going back to the bigs conversation we're having, I think that's purposeful this year too. You know, they had to go drastic last year to lose those games, to get in position to get a top five pick. They don't have to go drastic this year because they're starting off without Horford and without George Hill, but they're also starting off without a true center. Derek Favors is probably going to be the starter. I bet you he won't play on like back-to-backs and he'll rest some. And he's really more of a power forward than he is a center. You look at the rest of the centers, it's like Mike Muscala, career backup, and he's not a rim protector. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, he's more of a power forward, not a rim protector. He's a good defender, but not a rim protector. Isaiah Roby, not a rim protector. Basically, if he plays. So that's kind of purposeful too. Like, you can have a nice offense and three-point shooting and Shea and Giddey and Dort do their thing. But without a rim protector and any true rim protection, you can have fun competitive games, but you're probably going to lose a lot.
Truly, their best rim protection is Lou Dort 30 feet from the basket.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Or Poku. Is it? Or Poku? Yeah. I mean, Poku's going to lead the team in blocks, right? I mean,
that's true.
I would be surprised if – I mean, it might be Dort. I don't know. Just like trailing guys, but I bet it's Poku.
And you know what? Yeah. You know what helps losing looking terrible? And have we seen the new uniforms that were released today?
Yeah, yeah, it's a rough look, guys.
Well, I can't imagine those. They look too much like those, the most unpopular jerseys of all time, those vertical ones, but like dressed up a little bit.
They have to drop the vertical. I don't understand it.
Why is this so hard?
Who else? The other teams do the vertical thing. I can't think of a time where I ever thought it looked good. You know, on a basketball, maybe you see it in baseball sometimes, although I'm struggling to think of a specific example, but frankly, it's a disaster. Like, and the only color on the jersey is the Loves patch. Like, there's no national TV games this year, so nobody's going to notice, so it won't really matter. But my God, I mean, who's going to buy it? I mean, the whole point of the Thunder, you know, small market teams like this having so many uniforms is to sell more merch. Who is going to buy that? I don't understand.
I will say, I think they're going to look better than they do. I mean, like, that didn't have any color in it. Everybody's saying like they're going to be completely white. I don't think that's the idea. I think that was like a rough sketch of what the idea is. Like when you see like a model, that type of thing. So I don't think it's going to be like colorless or anything. So I think they'll end up looking better. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but I think they'll look better than what we've seen so far.
If they add color,
if they're the white and gray that is going around, we might not be able to see Josh Giddey. The grain on the court is lighter now. Like, if we really might lose him. And hey, that might be schematic. That might be on purpose.
This is only semi-relevant and we can move on, but have you guys seen the green light that like is coming off the arena out from the outside?
Well, not in person, but yeah, I know.
I've seen photos. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that should be blue. Like, I know it's Paycom, but like, what are we doing here?
I thought the same thing.
I don't understand.
You guys like, installed lights and they're not our color. What?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What is the point of, it's not a sign that's a Paycom. Like, I don't know. It seems excessive.
I'll go against the grain. To me, if you're paying like hundreds of millions of dollars for something, you can like make it purple. You can make it rainbow.
Did you read that?
No.
Did you, do you have a card from Paycom?
Cha-ching.
All right. I want to ask about Poku specifically, like in the preseason, like what have you seen from Poku that's like, that looks better than last year?
I mean, with Poku, it's, I wrote about this, in my latest Daily Thunder Journal. I mean, it's just the Poku experience because, you know, the third preseason game, it was rough. He was 1-for-7 and everybody was like, oh, Poku, he's never going to be anything. What a waste of a draft pick. He's going to be a bust. I'm like, the dude is like the 12th youngest player still in the NBA. Come on, give him a break. And he still swatted Jokic and Barton at the rim. But yeah, it was rough. It was rough. But then that last preseason game, he looked like he was playing the Clippers in the season finale, trying to mess up the Thunder's, draft odds. He couldn't miss. He was the best player on the court. And I think that's just Poku right now, because that's what he is. He has all this talent inside of him. Like, he has these skills ready to burst out. And that's why, you know, everybody's so high on him. But he's also 19 years old and really skinny and raw. So I think it's just going to be a roller coaster ride for the next couple of years until he settles into whoever he's going to be.
The shot looks improved. It really does.
It does.
To me, it looks like he is, he's kind of just getting where he wants to go. It doesn't always result in good stuff, him finding his spots, but the fact that he's getting there, I think is encouraging. And the ball handling looks a lot more secure, and the vision is still there. I think some of the passes hopefully are a little more accurate this year, but, I agree. I think he looks a lot more comfortable, and yeah, the experience is always a good time, no matter what.
What are the goals for Poku this year? So last year he averaged 8 points, almost 5 rebounds, 2 assists. I mean, like, he could probably double that, right? Maybe not double points. I don't
double. Do you think he starts
too aggressive?
I think he starts, or is it
apparently?
Just...
Apparently not. I think he should, but Brandon, didn't Dagnall say something about him like running the second unit or something like that?
Yeah. So he said that he's not completely getting rid of the idea that he could possibly start at some point down the road. But for right now, he said that he wants to run the bench unit through Poku. So he would be basically the sixth man. I predicted a while ago, before the first preseason game, the starters would be SGA, Dort, Giddey, Bazley, and Favors. And I think that's what it's going to be. I think that those will be the starters, and they want to use Poku as kind of like a six-man type player. It's tough. You know, SGA and Dort, obviously, those are locked in, nailed down. Giddey, you spend a number six pick on him, you got to start him, and it's clunky when you play him off the bench anyways because of all those guards. And then, you know, you need a center, whether that's Favors or JRE or Roby or whatever. So the last spot comes down to Bazley and Poku. And I think that, you know, Bazley's been there longer. He was the incumbent starter. So I just kind of felt like they were going to go with Bazley, and that's where they're going.
I did read that quote from Dagnall about Poku playing with the second unit as kind of a ultimatum on Bazley. I don't think that leash is very long.
I do think Poku will start at some point, whether it's injury or Bazley has a few bad games in a row and they want to try Poku. Like, I bet Poku starts at 25 games this year. Like, if you gave me an over under, I would probably, or in that range, I would probably take the over. But to start the year, he'll probably be on the bench.
It seems like whoever, like, let's say they give name one of the guys Brandon just mentioned as a starter. Any of those guys, if they choose to sit them, it seems like Poku just goes into whatever spot that is. Because, like, even if it's Shea, like, Giddey's probably going to run point and you bring Poku in, or Dort or whoever. It just seems like Poku's the kind of guy that's going to come in and be a starter, like the first replacement. I could be wrong, but that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I'm with you, because it makes sense, because, you know, we talk about positionless basketball, and truly – the Thunder, the way that the starters, like you said, you know, you can shift Giddey to starting point guard. Dort can be the two or the three. Poku can be the three or the four. There's so many different ways that you can work it. So I agree. I think that Poku would be kind of like first man up if one of the starters were out. You could even, if you wanted to, play Bazley as a small ball five and Poku as the four. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different ways they could take that.
I would personally, I mean, I know we want to move on. I would rather see that lineup than see Faber start more than like 10 or 15 games. Like, just play Bazley at the five. Like, what is the purpose of playing Derek Favors when you have so many forwards that need to get on the floor, so many, you know, guards that can, you know, play, like Ty Jerome can play up the lineup, those types of guys. I just don't see the point in playing Favors. And it's not like Favors is going to help you win, right? Like, And it's not even like that's the goal. So I don't understand, that's something that I'm not going to understand. I mean, you could, Brandon, you can try to convince me and I'll give you that opportunity, but it seems like a waste of time to me. That's how
I think that favors can make you more competitive. You know, when you talked about like, we don't want to see 30 point blowouts all the time and, you know, it's got to be more entertaining. I think that favors brings a little bit more stability at the five, a little bit more rim protection. And, you know, he's a solid scorer. As we saw, he can hit that mid-range. He's solid at the rim. And, you know, you want Shea and Dort and Giddey to keep their spirits up and be competitive. And you want somebody that provides some experience in that starting five. And I think Favors does that. He's kind of like the perfect guy. He's not so good like Horford to where he's going to win you a lot of games that you don't want to win. But he's not like, you know, throwing a rookie out there or a second round pick or a Moses Brown. No shade meant. But, you know, he's going to do a lot better than those guys. So he'll keep you more competitive. Plus, there's the whole down the line. If he plays well, shows out, they can flip him down the line. He's on a really nice contract, honestly. And he would help out some contenders and playoff teams. So, you know, if he can be kind of like a Al Horford light as far as getting a return for him as well. So I think it makes sense.
Yeah. You convinced me fine. You sold me the pen. No, I my only pushback on that, and it's minimal, I'll concede this, is that I'm not sure Derek Favors is good. Like, he only played 10 minutes a game last year for the Jazz. Is he better than Jeremiah Robinson Earl? Yeah, probably. But is he like 15 points a night better? Probably not at this point. So, you know, we'll see how that unfolds.
Let's go to SGA real quick. What are the, I'll set the percentage at 15% that he is an all-star this year. 15%. Are you guys going higher or lower?
Huh. Well, I mean,
I would, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I would say, it's higher than 15%, but I don't think he's going to be an all-star. Can I kind of couch it like that? Like, I would say 60-40, he's not going to be an all-star. And the reason is because the Thunder are not going to win very many games. Like, the Thunder won way too many games in the first half last year. He was one of the four or five most efficient guards in the league, and he still didn't make the all-star team. Now, maybe this year he's coming into the league, coming into the season with a bit more of a raised profile, so there's a chance, but like Clay's not going to play. That's a bad example. But there's other guys in the league. Like CJ McCollum missed too many games last year, but he was going to make the All-Star team if he didn't get hurt a few weeks before the All-Star game. Like guys like that, you know, like De'Aaron Fox is, they're going to win more games than the Thunder this year. And Fox is a really good player. Probably, I think Shea's better, but you could make the argument that they're in the same tier. So like, I think there's just too many guards in the West for Shea to get the nod this year, but I do think he'll be an all-star caliber player. I would say that. And I think I wouldn't rule it out completely that he makes the team, but I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to play an all-star level and he's going to be one of the best players in the Western Conference. He's going to be one of the best guards like he was last year. But he won't make it because of all the things that Spencer just said. So I guess technically I would go lower because I really don't think he's going to make it, but it should be higher because his percentages to his chance to make it should be higher. And if there's a couple injuries, look, I mean, Bradley Beal started in the All-Star game last year. Obviously it was in the East and his team was terrible when he made the All-Star team. They were one of the worst teams in the league. I mean, he was like leading the league in scoring, but there's a precedent. I mean, there's been bad players. Zion Williamson made it last year, and the Pelicans were not only bad, but they underperformed, and he had a lot of talent around him. Now he's a bigger, sexier name. I get that. But it's possible the West is just still so loaded, and the Thunder are going to be bad. But is Shea going to play at an all-star level and be one of the best guards and technically should make it? Yes.
What do we do with all of our memes if Ja makes it and Shea doesn't?
Oh, my God. The Grizzlies are, I mean, that's another team, just like Fox. Yeah, Ja probably will be in line above Shea if he's healthy. But yep. That's, yeah. And I mean, like, now, did Jamal Murray make it last year? I don't remember. He probably did. And so that's a spot that'll open up.
No, he was
Chris Paul might go out. No? Well, he got, oh, that's right. He got hurt and then came back and got hurt again. That's right. What, yeah. What does Shea have? Does Shea have to average like 30 a game before the All-Star break to make it? Like, I think he would have to do so. I think he would have to do something to where it was impossible to ignore his contribution for them, well, for him to get the nod.
It's kind of like Devin Booker. You know, it took him forever to make it because he was on a bad team, but putting up big numbers. But every year, everybody's like, "Ah, he probably should have made it, but bad team. Ah, he probably should have made it, but bad team." That's probably gonna be Shea for you know, it was last year and probably the next couple of years. I think he'd have to like score 30 a game or be one of the top three scorers in the league, that type of thing, to make it. Like, be so good that you can't ignore him. I do think it helps that he got a lot of notice last year for not making it. He was on a lot of snubs lists. You know,
Mike Conley's not going to make it this year. Yeah,
absolutely not. He shouldn't have made it last year. I'm still bitter.
Can we put to, I do want to talk about, like, so many people still view Shea as a wing player. Like,
it's so weird.
Like, well, why is that?
So, well, to be not fair, like
he's the first big guard.
No, but he was, I mean, that's kind of where he was as a Clipper. And I think that's where he was his first year in Oklahoma City too, where he played more three than one until last year. Right. I mean, last year was the first year where he played a lot of point. And he doubled, credit to him, he doubled his assist total. I mean, this year, that's a good point, Ryan. Like, he, if he, you know, takes the steps that we think that he's going to, he will nationally be known as a point guard after this year, because he might average like 8 assists a game, something like that. And at that point, it's, you know, if you don't know it, then you're just not paying attention. My question is Chad Ford going to learn how to pronounce his name this year? Will that be the year that this happens?
My guess is no. Typically, I feel like if you are pronouncing someone's name incorrectly, like multiple years in a row, like you either are trying to get it wrong or you don't care enough to get it right. And yeah, that's what it seems like to me. Like, people that say like Oak City, like that's not a thing. Like Oak, right. Referring to Oklahoma City as Oak City has never been a thing. Like Tom Penn, John Hollinger, like that is not a thing.
I think, like, Chris Vernon does that too. Yeah.
Yes. God. Yes. And I like Chris Vernon. That's the
thing. I do too. I love Chris Vernon. Yeah.
We must spread awareness when it comes to how to pronounce Shea's name.
Hey Ryan.
Yeah.
Just saying, you cut out, I would mark it down. You cut out there for a few seconds. I'm gonna have to edit something there.
Okay. Is it better?
Yeah. You're back.
But yeah, like it's been very weird to see like off season lists and rankings with Shea on wing lists. It's even the like wildest lists, I just didn't expect to see Shea out of position.
Yeah, he's listed as a two in so many spots. I keep seeing him listed like best shooting guards in the league list. Like, I'm glad he's making those lists at least. And it takes those kind of, it's so silly, but it takes all that kind of thing. Like seeing, you know, Shea on the Bleacher Report, top 10 shooting guards in the NBA, fan sided. You know, NBA.com's best shooting guards. He's not a shooting guard. He's a point guard. It's weird that they don't get it when it's very apparent. If you watch Thunder, I guess that's the answer right there. They're not watching the Thunder. But it does take those kind of things, seeing those names repeat on the best of list. And then you kind of start, it's like it gets in people's minds and it kind of gets stuck and in the subconscious. And then when you think of best, you know, guards, he's one of the guys that you recall. And it takes those kind of things to build up your reputation amongst the vote getters in the league.
Speaking of vote getters, let's go 30% that Josh Giddey makes the all rookie team, first team.
Over.
Yeah, over.
He's in a really nice position where he's going to have a really big role.
Yep.
His play style is really flashy as far as his passing goes, and he's NBA ready, as you could see. Obviously, coming into this, the bigger names are Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs and Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes and all those guys. But I think that given the role, given the play style, and given the raw numbers he's going to put up, I would put over. I would put at least – I would put like 50-50 he'll make the all-rookie team.
I'm gonna take it a step forward.
Go ahead.
I think it's a lock.
Wow.
I think nice. It's a lock that he makes the all-rookie team.
So nice. do you think he has a chance at rookie of the year then, Spencer, if he's a lock for first team?
I'd have to look back. I mean, how often is the number one pick just the rookie of the year if he plays? I mean, it's pretty often, right? I think there's been a few exceptions to that.
I think there's definitely exceptions to it. It's not, I mean, like look at Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, there's definite, but no, I think
Cade's going to be good though. Like I think Cade will probably win rookie of the year.
Cade is definitely going to be good. Jalen Green's going to be good, but you know, just based on preseason, again, this is four games and Cade didn't play, but Giddey was the best of those top six picks in preseason. He was, I mean, like Scotty Barnes is really the only other one with an argument, but most of that is based on his defense and his passing, which aren't really sexy for rookie of the year. I think that he's got a legitimate shot at rookie of the year. I'm not saying he's going to win it. I'm not saying he should be a favorite, but I do think that Josh Giddey has a legitimate shot to win rookie of the year.
Is that regardless of record? Like does team record have anything to like, do you think that will play? Think hurt him?
No, not at all.
No, I mean, Ben Simmons won rookie of the year on the process Sixers. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon, you mentioned one, and I think the Bucks were bad that year. Like, I mean, yeah.
It's almost the whole reason to have rookie of the year is to reward the bad teams for something. Like if you're, you know, if you've got one of the best rookies of the year, you're probably one of the worst teams, but you know, at least you can be in the running for one of the season awards. No, they won't hold that against them at all.
Trivia question for you guys, because I'm looking at a rookie of the year chart here. Who was the last number six overall pick to win rookie of the year?
It's got to be Dame, right? I don't remember if Dame won it though. I don't think Dame won rookie of the year, but
Damian
I know that
Lillard
he's
did win. He did win rookie of the year. It's
okay.
Dame.
I couldn't remember for sure, but yeah.
Yeah, it's Dame.
Billy King called that a three-player draft.
Man, it's a shame that Presti can't, you know, have Billy King and David Kahn around anymore to bully.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And no Gerson anymore either.
Oh, it's a shame.
Rest in peace, my brother. I was gonna ask about guys you see coming up that, I mean, we're gonna be watching losses a lot this year. Some guys that are worth looking forward to in next year's draft, because we have talked about the reasons like why they didn't take a big this year. The bigs, the class next year, specifically the top of the draft is right as of right now. And obviously this could change, but is dominated by big men. And that is very exciting. If you're an Oklahoma City fan.
Yeah. It's three big ones at the top, right? It's Paolo Banchero, it's Chet Holmgren, and Jalen Duren are the three. And then, I mean, I'm looking at Sam Vecenie's mock here. He's got a guy, somebody I'm not familiar with, Jabari Smith Jr., 6'10 forward from Auburn. I'm going to be honest, I'm not totally sure who this is. And he's not going to play center because they have Walker Kessler. So I assume he's going to play the four. But that's another big to watch out for.
For those that aren't familiar with the names, Chet is at Gonzaga, Paolo's at Duke, and Jalen's at Memphis.
Yep. And then the last one is Nikola Jovic.
Jovic,
who is in Serbia playing overseas in Europe. He's another sort of center, you know, 4-5 prospect.
Could he have been drafted last year or this
Jovic?
Year? Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I'm looking at the Athletics mock right now, and he is listed at 18 years old. So I don't believe so.
But yeah, it's a very, very exciting class for where the Thunder could potentially be picking. And we won't even talk about the fact that they could have multiple lottery picks and, and the fact that there are so many bigs at the top of this class. It's, Like, we are going to have a lot of fun watching this team. The result, you know, the win-loss column may not appear all that fun, but we are going to have a blast, and we're going to have a blast talking about this team. And mark my words when I say that, we really will. And on top of that, there will be hopefully a rainbow at the end, or a pot of gold at the end of this this rainbow, because these guys are really, really good and exciting.
You know what, I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't want to like be a bummer here, but one of the big things for me with the whole Rockets being the worst team in the league last year and the Thunder basically having a coin flip chance of getting that pick, every single time the number one pick since they flattened the odds, this would have been, I think, the fourth year. And every time the number one worst team keeps getting a top four pick, and that's supposed to be a coin flip odds. So my thought was, man, the probability is really, really high that the Thunder are going to get that pick just because they can't keep landing on heads over and over again for the worst team in the league. So now I'm worried that the Thunder are the worst team in the league this year. Like, that coin flip, it's going to, you know, with like the Thunder luck, it's going to like not land this time. Now it's going to be tails instead of heads, and the probability kicks in. That said, you still got to do it to give yourself the best chance.
If they are the worst record in the league, what is the lowest? I mean, the lowest they can fall is four. Is that right?
Five. Yeah, because four.
That's a fever.
Four
dream.
Teams will be drawn, so they can be five. But even then, we didn't mention him because they do want a big. But Jaden Hardy with the G League Ignite. Yeah. Now, obviously, you want a big, but if you get like the fifth pick and all those bigs are gone, and you get Jaden Hardy, sure, it's not the ideal fit. Go for a big next year because he's a stud too. There's five guys right now. You can maybe talk about Jaden Ivey too, but if you get a top five pick, you're getting a stud. It's another really, really loaded class.
And if you take Hardy, can we talk about the guy that's coming down the pike in 2023?
Oh, yeah. Wambayana. I can't say.
And Amone Bates.
We'll work
Victor
on that.
Wembanyama. I believe it's Victor Wembanyama and Amone Bates. Other guys in this 2022 draft that I feel like we should mention, they're both wings. Patrick Baldwin, who's going to be playing for his dad at Milwaukee. He's 6'9", and he's an awesome shooter. And I assume they're going to have him playing on the ball at some point because he plays for Milwaukee. And then AJ Griffin, who's going to be at Duke. I think he's hurt right now, but he is a pretty interesting forward prospect. His dad is on staff with the Raptors. So that's, you know, and played in his dad's Adrian Griffin, played in the
Adrian
NBA.
Griffin, yeah.
So
former Thunder assistant.
That's right. I forget about that. Yeah. But yeah, that's right. Yeah. And yeah, so his son is 5-star, going to be at Duke this year. I don't know, just a couple other wing names. If the big class, you know, we talk about this big class being elite, and it is, but like this could also, you know, this could look very different in May, right? Like Chet Holmgren is not exactly a ton of positivity around whether or not his body's going to hold up. I mean, he is Poku skinny, and unlike Poku, where Poku's going to play on the wing, Chet is a center, right? Like Chet is an awesome rim protector. He's going to be a center theoretically if he reaches his peak. So you kind of worry about him holding up there. Banchero is awesome, but I'm sure, you know, there's ways that could go wrong. And then I don't know a ton about Jalen Duren, but he's, you know, he's only 17 right now and he's built like crazy. Like he could play in the NBA tomorrow, probably just based on his physicality and his frame. But I don't know about the skills there. I'm going to be really interested to watch him this year.
And to your point, Spencer, like so many things can change. This time last year, BJ Boston was like in the top five.
Yeah.
So many things will change between now and then. But yeah, I do think Victor would go one this coming draft if he was eligible. I think he's the best prospect in the world.
He may have gone number one over Cade.
He may have. Very fair. Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, you may have seen a viral video of him like working Rudy Gobert in a workout at like 16 years old. He's phenomenal.
I mean, Mike Schmitz has been talking about, I first heard his name from Mike Schmitz on a podcast when he was like 14. Like, I mean, he's going to go number one almost assuredly. And then you've also got Bates, Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson. Like the 2023 draft is honestly probably even better than this 2022 draft.
Wouldn't it be fun to have a lot of future picks?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be sick. I mean, that's the other thing I think, you know, Thunder fans should get on board with this being two more years of being bad. Like just get on the train. Just get on board now. Yeah. It'll make it easier. Like, this is not the last season where the Thunder are going to have their own pick be in the lottery. And that is a good thing long-term. Now, honestly, it's 2023 should be the last year, right? Like, if things go correctly, some of these shots hit, then you've got two more years out of this and then you hit the gas. But it's a firm two and not one.
And so many more picks, you know, with so many more left over to do with however you please.
Well, it times out perfectly. If you look at it, like, all the puzzle pieces fit. The 2021 draft that we just had, the 2022 draft, and the 2023 draft, all these scouts and all these experts are saying these three drafts are absolutely loaded. You know, and this is not just a coincidence. Sam Presti has, you know, he has guys scouting middle schoolers and high schoolers. I mean, he knew that the 2021, 2022, 2023 were all loaded. Okay, you got Kimball Walker on the books for this year and next year. You got all these draft picks coming in. And then when you start to – you get Kimba off the books, you've got your guys in the 21, 22, and 23 drafts. So you got all your young studs. Then you got all these other picks from the Clippers and the Rockets who should start – you know, the Clippers at least should start being bad at some point, and maybe those picks become really, really good. And so you're still getting good picks because your own picks aren't going to be as good. And, hey, you can pick swap and all those things. You can start pushing in some of those chips to cash in to trade for a guy like a DeAndre Ayton 2 years from now, or a Ben Simmons 2 years from now, or a Kyrie Irving 2 years from now, disgruntled or bad situations, to go along with Shea and Giddey, Dort, Poku, and whoever you get in 2022 and 23. I mean, the puzzle pieces fit. You just got to be patient and enjoy the process as a Thunder fan, because it's probably this year and next year, and then you cash in the chips, and it should fit perfectly.
That is the dream right there. I mean, that, like, if it goes according to plan, it could be incredible. Yep. Absolutely incredible. Yep.
I mean, Shea's in his prime at that point. Giddey will be, you know, we'll know what he is 2 years from now. We should know what Poku is 2 years from now. If Lu Dort is still on this team 2 years from now, then that means that he's still really good, you know, that, and he's probably continued to get better. So there'll just be a lot more clarity.
Yeah, exactly. And the only big contracts will be Shea's and Dort's. And, you know, in the grand scheme, that's not a whole lot of money. And so you can go out and spend or trade for whoever you want.
Spencer, would you bet actual real American dollars that Lu Dort is on this team at the end of the season?
I would not bet him. I mean, no, I would not. I think it's very possible that he gets traded. In fact, in our in Daily Thunder's predictions column that I think comes out tomorrow, I predicted that he will be traded at the deadline.
I thought he was going to get traded last year. So I'm with you.
Let me expand on this. And then Brandon, I'm assuming you disagree and we can go back and forth here. I just think that if you trade Dort now, you maximize his, and by now, I mean, at the deadline, you know, 40, 50 games from now, whenever it is, you maximize the value of the asset, right? Like, he's on a super cheap deal. He's at $1.7 million this year, $1.9 million next year. And that is and his defensive versatility, all that, his, you know, he's gotten better as a shooter. And if he continues to, you know, improve his shooting throughout the season and shows that he can knock down an open three, he's an unbelievably valuable piece to a contender. And he's not that valuable to the Thunder for the next couple of years. And do you really want to be the team that pays him $16 million a year? I'm not sure that you do. Dort, for as good as he is, does not fit the positionless basketball that the Thunder are clearly moving to. He's not really much of a distributor. He's not, you know, a super skilled player in the way that like Shea and Josh Giddey are. But obviously when the Thunder acquired him, it's unbelievable value, 100x on what they, you know, all they gave up to sign him was a two-way spot. So whatever that's worth, he's been unbelievable, obviously. And I just think it's, you know, this trade deadline is when you cash in on that. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see it.
I'd be shocked to see it. I mean, I completely hear what you're saying. And when you look at the value of his contract right now, it's so high right now because it's so low for this year, next year, and to a playoff team, to a contender. I mean, they may pony up something really, really nice to get a Lu Dort to help them because you can get him for super cheap, doesn't affect your salary cap, and you get an impactful player. So I get it. That said, I still don't know if it's worth it to the Thunder because he's still on this trajectory that's getting better and better. I mean, when you look at him, he was an undrafted defensive specialist. Okay. Then he turns into kind of like a lockdown defensive guy. Then he adds a 3-point shot last year. I mean, he's shot over 34% from three last season. Now it's just a preseason, but his shot looks better. He's hitting at a ridiculous clip this preseason. And I know he started off ridiculous last year. Like, I mean, so small sample size, you can't say much. But when you look at the work ethic and the improvement and all those things, I think with a guy on that trajectory and that age in a rebuild, you don't want to give up pieces that look like they're keepers. And Lu Dort looks like a keeper. And that's not even getting into the whole, you know, fan favorite, Shea's best friend, Canadian connection, all those things, not getting into all that. But, you know, when you're rebuilding, you know, you take all these shots in the dark. You take, you know, dart throws, whatever you want to call them. Shea's obviously the guy. Giddey looks like he's a keeper. He's a guy. Poku may not be. Baisley may or may not be. Man, Maladone, all these guys may or may not be. Lu Dort is the next closest right now. He looks like a keeper. And at that age, that trajectory, I don't think you give that up.
I agree. If he gets way better again this year, then I agree. You keep him and you pay, you know, you extend him next offseason. But if it looks like the improvements, you know, for the first 40 games of this season are marginal and it looks like he, like a plateau is coming soon, then I think you offload him. Does that make sense?
That's fair.
Yeah. The other element is that he's Shea's best friend, right? Like that's going to be a difficult conversation to have.
Right.
But, you know, and it's obviously not ideal. And, you know, I think I said this around the draft or maybe after, I straight up would not trade Lu Dort to the Raptors. Like absolutely not. I'm not trading him to Canada and giving Shea another reason to leave the Thunder for Toronto at some point. I kind of sound like I'm kidding, but I'm like, if the Raptors made the best offer, I would take the second best offer or I would just keep him.
Now that Shea's locked in for the next 6 years, though, if the Raptors said, hey, you know what, here's Scotty Barnes, give us Lou, you wouldn't do that?
I mean, I don't think I would.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, I was never that high on Scotty Barnes, though. Like, you guys were higher on Barnes. I mean, I would have talked myself into it. But, I mean, the other thing is you mentioned Shea on six-year deal, and that's all well and great. And I think we're all happy that Shea signed that deal. But Ben Simmons is practicing with his phone in his pocket today with 4 years left on his contract. So, like, what does that really – I mean, you know, if you piss off Shea enough, what does that really mean?
I mean, that's true, but I will say, you know, this, you know, this is, you know,
he really did.
These aren't cold, hard facts. And there's a little bit of, you know, this is subjective, but Shea doesn't seem like that dude. Like if you can, whatever we can, you know, and I get that KD didn't seem like that dude and all that stuff, but Shea really, my first impression, like day one media day was like, oh, this guy is like sharp. He's mature. His IQ, like he just seems different. So I believe him. And when he says he gets the long-term picture and he understands the long-term and all those things, I believe him. Like I just, yeah. I think that he's bought in and I think he's that dude.
He really was practicing with his phone in his pocket.
He really did that in some sweatpants.
I could not believe it.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, Ben Simmons has never really seemed like that dude. Like, it's not completely shocking. Yeah. You know, there's only so much you can get from.
Yeah. But there's been lots of disgruntled stars who, you know, tried to get out of there. You know, Anthony Davis always seemed like a great guy, and I'm sure he is. But he got out of his contract, or, you know, got traded 2 years early, or however much it was. Like, Damian Lillard has 4 years left on his deal and is sort of silently threatening to, you know, request a trade from Portland. Like, and that guy's been as loyal as anybody. So, this is sort of a pointless discussion because Scottie Barnes for a Lou Dort offer, I don't think it's happening. But I know you guys don't either. But I think this is the year. If you were going to maximize Lou Dort, just to put a bow on this and we can move on, I think this deadline, if you get an offer for, like, you know, a 2024 first round pick plus like a young player or something, I think you take that. I mean, if it's like top six protected or something like that, I mean, I would, depending on the franchise, like you'd have to think really hard about turning that down.
I totally agree with Spencer.
I'm not trading him for 2 seconds. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, I'm not, you know, it's not worth it to the Thunder to give him away. But if you can get, you know, especially if it's a contender that's a small market like Portland, and, you know, contenders used a little loosely there, but if you can get a first round pick, or like if you can take advantage of Minnesota, a team that is desperate to win in the next couple of years, and you can get a first round pick down the line, like, that's gold.
You know who might be desperate and we might be able to go just get him one more time is the Clippers.
Well, see, now I'm not interested in making the Clippers better.
No, yeah, absolutely don't make the Clippers better.
We're not trading them a star. We're trading them a role guy.
I don't know.
I don't know that
it would have to be.
I don't know that he moves the needle if they're not completely healthy.
Well, hopefully the Clippers aren't contenders this year. So, I mean, like, hopefully the Clippers aren't sitting in the 4 seed at the trade deadline.
They won't be.
That would be deflating. I haven't seen any, like, doesn't Kevin Pelton usually do like a win projection? I looked briefly before we started the pod. And I couldn't find – I'm very curious to see where the analytics, you know, models and that and projections have the Clippers. Because to me, they should not be very good, you know, especially in the nights where Paul George doesn't play. But, you know, it seems like most people that I've seen have them still making the playoffs. And I don't know, man. Like, especially if Paul George misses 30 games, like, that's – I mean, who's their best player if Paul George goes out?
Yeah, if Paul George misses some time, and he's missed time every year for the last few years, they're absolutely, you know, depending on how much he misses, they're going to lose a lot of games if he goes out. I think it was Matt Moore. I saw him put his Western Conference predictions up last night, I think, and he had them number 8. And that feels about right, number 8 in the Western Conference. I mean, if you can get like a number 16 pick – year one from the Clippers picks, that's fantastic. And a loaded draft. I still wouldn't be surprised if it's better than that. I'm not saying it's going to be, but like you said, if Paul George gets hurt, that's a complete game changer. And that could end up being a really, really good pick. But if the prediction right now with Paul George is healthy is like the Clippers, the number 8 seed, and the Thunder get something like the 15th or 16th pick, that's a win.
Well, the Thunder have Phoenix's pick this year too, I believe, right?
Yep. Yeah, and they might not have Chris DeAndre Paul Ayton. So,
what if the Thunder end up with picks 16 and 18 again? I'm gonna vomit. I think like we need to get like some variety in here.
538's win projections has the Clippers winning 48 games, which on here has.
God, I need to. Man, I would take the under.
I would absolutely take the under.
That has them 6th in the West. They have the Lakers at 42-40.
Whoa.
What? No, that can't be right.
With a 50% chance to make the playoffs.
The Lakers? Whoa.
The Lakers.
That's insane.
A 4% chance to make the finals.
Under on the Clippers and the over on the Lakers on that, without a doubt.
They have an 82% chance for the Clippers to make the playoffs.
Wow.
That's very interesting. Like the Lakers are really low. They have the Lakers missing the playoffs. They have the Grizzlies ahead of them, the Pelicans ahead of them, Clippers, Blazers, Mavericks, Nuggets, Suns, Jazz.
People are one, overreacting way too much to preseason. This preseason, and I get, you know, if this is a statistical thing, overreacting too much to a lack of shooting. There's too much talent. If LeBron, Russ, and Anthony Davis are healthy all season, they're making the playoffs without a doubt. There's zero chance they miss the playoffs.
They'll probably be like the three seed or something. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I assume the Jazz will win the West again, but then if I was going to pick a team to be next, it would be the Lakers.
They have the Bucks as the best record in the league, and that's 56 wins.
That makes sense.
54 for the Jazz. They no do issue have with the that. Thunder dead last at 19 wins, the Rockets next at 20 wins.
I also am predicting the Thunder to win 19 games, so that makes sense. It'll probably be like 28, and, you know, we'll all hate life, but, you
28
know.
Wins. That's a that's
how are the Rockets going to be that bad when they have – three rookie of the years and Jalen Green, Alperen Sengun, and Garuba.
It's a great question you bring up.
Three rookie of the years.
Yeah. According to Twitter and Rockets fans, they're all winning rookie of the year, apparently.
A shared award. I mean, the Hawks all made the All-Star team one time. The entire starting lineup. but yeah, that's very – I don't understand. The Lakers at 42 wins, the Knicks at 43. Wild, man.
I mean, so, some of that schedule, but yeah, well, something might be broken there. Maybe some, I mean, because Westbrook wasn't even that bad at the end of last year. I don't know. I'd be curious what they're using there.
Yeah, I just clicked on their player base forecast for the 21-22 season projections. All right, so Spencer gave his number out, 19 wins. Brandon, how many games does this team win this year?
Yeah, I think that's right about right, honestly. I'll say if this is Price is Right, I feel like he's right on track, so I'm going to do one over and go 20. I'll say that at the 20 win threshold.
So that would be what, 20 and 62? So is 20 and 62 the worst record in the league at the end of the year? Or does it have to be 19?
No, I think that's probably the worst. That's probably the worst record. There's going to be some teams that end up being bad that people aren't playing on right now or think they're going to be a little bit better, whether due to injuries or guys not playing as well as they think. And, you know, it's just preseason, but the Nuggets were trying to beat the Thunder the other night, and they had Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon on the floor, and they were legitimately trying to beat the Thunder, and the Thunder beat them. They even put Jokic back in the fourth quarter to try to make a run to win that game, and the Thunder still won. I mean, there's going to be some games like that just blow you away because Shai, Giddey, Dort, and Poku are going to go off or something. So they're going to win some games that you don't think. And of course they're going to lose a lot of games, but yeah, I think 20 is right about right.
Yeah. My number was 19 as well. Like you're saying, Spencer, I wouldn't be shocked if this number climbed to like 23, 24, based on what you both have said. But the lack of rim protection, like, it will be an assault on the rim every night, and Lou Dort he can't guard everyone. And I think they're probably going to be a team that defends the three pointer well, but I do not think they will defend the rim very well. And late in games, I think that's what, even if it's a close game, I think that's what will eventually do them in. Even if it is a close game, I like that 18 to 19 number.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think Shai plays back-to-backs this year?
Yes. Yeah, he's going to play back-to-backs. They're not going to rest Shai this season. They're, like I said, you know, with Horford gone and George Hill gone, they won't feel the need to do that type of thing. And they're no, I don't see, think we'll see like an intentional tank job. I think they'll play the players they have. And, you know, except for maybe Derek Favors, and, you know, you can get by with it because he's a vet and those type of things. But no, Shea's going to play, I think, all the games fully. And you don't want to do that to Shea. Like, Shea wants to play. He's competitive. He wants to go out there and win. And he's 23-year-old and a budding star. So, no, you don't do that to Shea this season.
There were some times last year, even before Shea fully went out with that injury, where Shea and Dort were, like, missing a game here and there, kind of sprinkled in. I don't know that it was necessarily back-to-backs. But I wonder if, you know, maybe with those two guys, you see that. Maybe with Poku, if they feel like, you know, he, you know, needs a night off or something here or there as part of his program. I mean, I think there's certain things that they could justify. But I hope he plays every night. Like I said, like, I don't think he alone is going to be enough to drag this team to 28 wins. So, and if he is, I kind of want to see him try, because that would be pretty interesting to watch.
if he's on pace to get them to that level, even to that number, like north of 25 wins, I do think that's where you start to see him in that conversation for All-Star, if that's happening early in the season, for sure.
Well, and here's another thing, right? Like, you know, going off of like how much is Shea going to play? You know, will he sit at all? You know, most teams that are bad tank like the last 30 games of the year. Like, that happens to five or six teams every year. Like, what the Thunder did last year was maybe, you know, maybe a little excessive going 2-29, but teams generally will shut down their veterans in an effort to improve their draft stock at the last, you know, after the All-Star break and, you know, last 20, 25 games or so. So I think some of that is fair play, right? Like, you know, again, don't lose 30 games in a row, but I don't think that, you know, you'll see a ton of the opening night starters starting every single game the last month of the year.
I totally agree. Well, this time last year, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Shea would have his knee scoped or something around when they shut him down, and they went with what they went with, leaving the knee scope as still an option. So I wouldn't rule anything out around that time.
Those plantar fascia injuries they can be reoccurring. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll say this. If for some reason the Thunder are better this year than expected and they're up closer to 30 wins, it's all going to be because of Shea, Giddey, Dort, Poku. And that's kind of okay. Like, you don't want to not be one of the bottom teams because you want one of those top picks. But there's this alternate timeline where Shea gets even better and starts to get in that. You know, if they're winning 30 games – with Shea, Dort, and Giddey, that means these guys are even better than we thought, and they're ahead of the curve with thought. And that's kind of nice, too.
I'm not concerned.
Same. Like, I'm not either. I'm just saying, like, for those that are worried that the Thunder are going to win too many games.
It won't be because of George Hill and Al Horford.
Exactly. Yeah, those are the games that you're like, oh, gosh, come on. Or Mike Muscala.
I was just about to bring him up there. I guess that's still an option.
Yeah, but you can already see it from preseason. He's not going to, you know, I think that Mike Muscala has accepted, I'm the vet on this team. I'll get some minutes here and there. I like being the leader. The Thunder are happy to have him in that role. I don't think he's going to play a lot of minutes. He gets the deal, and he understands, and he's cool with it. One thing I do want to bring up with Spencer bringing up, you know, tanking the second half of last season and losing all those games. And then when the draft lottery happened, everybody's like, see, it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. We shouldn't have lost all those games. We didn't get one of the top four picks. We didn't get one of the top five picks. Something nobody's talked about. The Warriors wanted Josh Giddey. And if they had the chance, they're probably selecting Giddey over Kuminga, right? So if the Thunder were even one spot better, let's say they flipped with the Warriors, which was the Timberwolves pick. If that gets flipped, the Thunder don't have Josh Giddey right now, and he's looking really, really good. So, I mean, it was still worth it if Giddey ends up being what we all think he could become. So it's just kind of funny how that happens, because everybody said it wasn't worth it because of the draft lottery. It's still that one single spot. The Warriors were going to take Giddey by all reports.
I mean, is Giddey like the most fun personality that the Thunder have ever had? Like, I made a joke earlier about his TikTok.
Adams was like insane.
I was going to say Steven Adams.
But like, sometimes, yeah, but some of Steven Adams' his comedy is he just cursed in a New Zealand accent and everybody kind of chuckled because you don't see that every day in Oklahoma. Like, that was a big element of why Steven Adams was funny, at least to me. I don't know, like, and maybe Giddey is just like the Gen Z version of Steven Adams. Maybe that's what it is.
With an Australian accent, he's got that going for him for sure.
Yeah.
I do think we have to at least mention Mitch McGarry. Like, that guy was a wild man. Well documented, wild man.
Is that the Mitch McGarry that was taken like 12 picks above Nikola Jokic? Is that the one? Is that the same guy? No, real quick before we move on from Giddey, are you guys aware of his nickname?
I love this so much. I like
NBA Chalamet.
Yes.
NBA Chalamet is the best nickname.
If you're not a
pop culture guy, like, it's Timothy Chalamet is a very famous actor who's like super young and they have the same hair. And yes. So yeah, NBA Chalamet instead of Timothy Chalamet. It's great.
Was that Vassini that
I don't think that's he the
first,
started
that's
that,
the first place but I
that's,
saw.
That's so I, he tweeted it like a week or two ago and I looked it up and it, you know, yeah, there had been other mentions, but it's perfect.
Yeah, I've seen it in a lot of places. It is perfect. One last bow though on the personality. I think hands down still gotta be Steven Adams. Josh Giddey is great, but it's still so early. But we've got to give a special shout out to Kendrick Perkins. He was a great personality while he was here. And then Russell Westbrook, it may not have been the same type of like goofy, fun, funny, but Russell Westbrook's one of the best personalities in NBA history. And he was here in OKC.
Can we call Barry Trammell in and get his thoughts on that?
Nice question.
I don't know. Like, in yes, Perkins, but the Thunder didn't draft Burke. I don't know. I want to give it to Giddey just because it's fun. Although Poku is also seems like, you know, a very fun personality. There's more of a language barrier there. But so maybe in a couple of years we'll start to see that more and more. But I loved his interactions on Instagram this year with Shea. That was over the summer. That was great.
The young guys really do seem to have bonded. They do seem to genuinely enjoy being around each other and being teammates, which is – I mean, if you're going to be in the situation they're in, that is a huge plus.
Listen, the whole key to this is keeping morale high. Like, yes. That is the entire point. Like,
yes.
Get better at basketball and come to work with a smile on your face every day, if at all possible. And it's a win. But that is a key component. Like, and that is something that the process Sixers didn't really value, if we're being honest.
Another question. My answer is an emphatic yes. Are you guys still as excited as you were about Coach Dagnall?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think he's the real deal.
It's going to be a few years before it matters, right? But I mean, it's not very often that a rebuild coach gets to stick around this to see the fruits of their labor. Brett Brown did for a few years. But yeah, I mean, by all accounts, he seems to be a good fit. I mean, he's a super young guy, but did great last year. I mean, my favorite moment from him is still getting after Poku kind of showed up KO after KO made a bad pass. Yes. If you guys remember.
Yes.
And he said, "You've effed up plenty of times."
The best.
Put that in the Thunder Museum.
That was a great, great moment from last year.
Put it in the Hall of Fame. I don't think the Thunder are going to have a reason to not be happy with their head coach for at least a couple more years. But yeah, I mean, I have no complaints. Can we cut down on challenges in the last 2 minutes? Sorry, Brandon. I had one thought. No more challenges. How about that's one? You know, I'm kind of kidding. But
or just use it in the first half. Just burn it. Yeah, burn it in the first half.
Yeah, just coincidentally, oh, shoot, I used my challenge earlier in the game. Can't use it here with 7 seconds left on this out-of-bounds play.
How quickly are we going to, so like they are not going to, well, there are going to be way less reviews in the last 2 minutes of games, which overall is a great thing. Like games shouldn't take as long as they do, especially at the end. But man, we could see like where a play that we're used to being challenged, well, we just play on. It's clearly was the incorrect call. That could lead to Thunder wins. That could lead to Thunder losses. Like it's going to be a real sweepstakes to start the year.
I was kidding a minute ago when I said during your challenge, like the coaches can't be tanking, obviously. And I hope people understood
for
that.
For sure.
I actually think it's coaching malpractice if you use your challenge in the first 58 minutes of the game with these new rules. Like, somebody's going to do it, but it's with them, and if people don't know what we're talking about, there's no more auto reviews on out of bounds plays in the last 2 minutes. Like those will have to come from coaching challenges. Do you get one or two of those challenges? I'm not sure on that, but you
get one.
You only get one. I mean, they're probably going to have to up that to two with as many calls as the refs miss in the last couple minutes. But you shouldn't even consider pulling that out until there's like at minimum 2.5 minutes left in the game. And honestly, maybe not until the final minute.
Which is why Dagnall should burn that thing in the second quarter, mid second quarter. Oh, I don't know. Couldn't tell. Let's take a look.
I still can't believe that he used the challenge in that Clippers finale and won. I was like, what is happening? If he still has his job after that, his job's secure for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was technically the right thing to do, and he won the challenge. And you know, if this wasn't bizarro world where wins are losses and losses are wins, that's a great thing. But yeah, man.
All right, you guys got anything else before we sign off for another season of Thunder basketball?
One quick thing. Well, Brandon, do you have anything Thunder related?
The only other things I'd say, I think what this season comes down to, this is all about, you know, we talked about keepers, core pieces. Sam Presti said himself in his media day press conference that he wanted to use this as a baseline. And what he meant was, that's why we don't have Kemba Walker. That's why we don't have Al Horford, George Hill. We're going to play all these young guys, big minutes. One, that helps us with our draft pick. And two, we could see who are keepers. We know SGA is one. I think Dort is one and Giddey is one. This is a big year. Poku is going to be around for a few more years regardless. But to me, this year is all about seeing how SGA, Dort, Giddey, Poku, Mann, and maybe Bazley look. All the rest of the guys could be kind of nice role players and things like that. But those are like your high upside, you know, these could really be something type of guys. So to me, that's what this season is all about, is those handful of guys. I'm really high on Ty Jerome. I'm high on Jeremiah Robinson Earl. But these are like role players. They should be able to stick around as role-playing guys. But I want to see what those high upside guys do. And like, does SGA take the next step to become like a superstar? Does Lou Dort take the next step to be like, okay, his offense is legit. His three-point shooting is legit, and he's still doing lockdown defense. Does Josh Giddey, is he in the rookie of the year conversation? Poku, does he show more star flashes this season than he did last season? Bazley, was last year a fluke, and this year he kind of starts to put it together. Trey Mann, does he start to look one of the best offensive rookies in the league? To me, don't care about wins and losses. You know, not to be whatever, but the other guys are kind of, you know, auxiliary. I want to see what those handful of guys do.
You know, we didn't talk about Bazley at all, and I think we probably should. I mean, I think we all three of us are a bit lower on him after the way last year went. But this is maybe a bigger year for him than anybody else other than Shea, just in that, like, Bazley is extension eligible next year.
Yeah, stakes are high for Bazley.
The Thunder do not take players into restricted free agency. I mean, when was the last – I can't even remember the last time. Has it ever happened? I mean, I'm not sure that it has. So this is, you know, like I mentioned, Dort might get traded to the deadline. Darius Bazley might get traded to the deadline. Like, Hamidou Diallo got dealt last year for something. And I think Bazley is going to be good. Now, I'm skeptical that he figures it out. I feel like he's a guy that he's going to figure it out on his second or third or fourth team that he's on, which happens to NBA players all the time, right? Like, you have to recalibrate what your expectations are for your career. The light bulb comes on and you play as a role guy for 11, 12 years in the NBA, but you play for seven different teams. Like, that's kind of what I would project Bazley to be if you made me pick a path for him right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he could also turn it on this year and earn himself an extension next summer, which would be great for him. And if it happens, it'd be good for the Thunder too, I think. But stakes are high for him for sure.
Spencer, what was the thing you wanted to bring up?
Oh, I just wanted to, I don't know if you guys are opinionated on this or not, but this midseason tournament idea that that Adam Silver's been pushing, and he gave a quote today about it. Mark Stein tweeted about it. I just want to go on the record. I am extremely in favor of this. I think it's an awesome idea. I'm a big soccer fan. I don't know. Are you guys soccer fans?
I'm a Ted Lasso fan.
Okay. You know how in Ted Lasso this year, season two, they played, I believe it was Manchester City in the FA Cup.
Right.
And they got destroyed because, you know, whatever. The FA Cup is kind of like the conference tournament of English soccer, if you think about it like that. And not in that, like, you know, there's a, it's not like you go on to anywhere. It's just it's a totally separate entity. It's a different competition than your regular season. And I think having something like that in the NBA would be really, really cool, especially for markets like Oklahoma City, because it gives your, you know, young teams like Oklahoma City has been in the past and are going to be over the next few years. It gives them something to fight for, right? Like, or the Grizzlies, or, you know, or maybe the Rockets when they were, you know, competing for titles, but didn't end up winning one. Like, if the Thunder had won a midseason tournament in 2015 or 2016, it, you know, obviously not as important as winning an NBA title, but there would be a banner at the Paycom Center right now, and it would be pretty cool. And the fans would be, you know, it would be something that the fans could kind of point to and say, hey, look, we accomplished this. And the whole Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook era wasn't for essentially nothing in terms of titles, right? So it gives other teams something to chase for on a yearly basis. That is it's just another competition. It's something else to be competitive about. I think the game, if they do it right, the games would be really fun. It's just something that I hope happens, that I haven't seen a ton of support for, but I really hope it happens.
Have they mentioned details on like how it would be incentivized?
No, and that's kind of part of the problem, right? Is like, I mean, maybe you could do like $1 million a player for the champion. There's been lots of different ideas floating around. You know, I think you could make the quote unquote pool play, you know, part of the regular season, right? So like, you could say this is a regular season game, but it's also, you know, a quote unquote pool play game for the Bill Russell Cup or whatever they're going to call it. I don't know. But yeah, that is a problem, right? Like, and it's only cool if you get the players to be really excited about it, you know, to at least be like, I don't know, 70% of playoff atmosphere, I think, mm-hmm. at least for the, you know, the bracket play, if you could get that, which they've been able to do in the past with, you know, the last few years doing the Elam ending and the All-Star game. Like, those All-Star games have been competitive. Like, they've fixed the All-Star game. So at some point, these guys are just going to fight for pride, I think, in their own, you know, like little personal rivalries, and that will matter. The other thing that the FA Cup in England does, they play all their game. They play like at least the semifinals and the championship game. It's called Wembley Stadium in London. It's basically like if every game was at Madison Square Garden. It's just like this famous venue that means a lot to everybody in London. So I wonder if they could do something with that where like, they play all the games either at Madison Square Garden or at Staples Center, or maybe, you know, they find a venue in Vegas, something like that, and make sort of a spectacle out of the, you know, achievement of getting to that stage. But I just think that the players will eventually, you know, will have something to fight for. Like, everybody's got their own motivations, but I think that it'll be something worth fighting for. I rambled on that for a while, but I've been wanting. I really hope this happens. Like I think it would be really cool. I'm happy that Adam Silver's experimenting with something like this, and I see a lot of hate for it, and I don't understand why. Like I just
because it's new,
you know. Well, it's more basketball, guys. Like yeah. And another thing, it would let you. And again, the format and everything would be is still very much up for discussion, I think, but I think the idea is that it would let teams cut down the regular season to like 72 games, which, you know, give players rest here and there. I don't know. I just think it's something else for the, you know, the third, fourth best teams in the league to chase. And maybe, you know, sometimes the team in soccer, you know, in the Premier League that wins the championship also wins the FA Cup, right? Like I think, you know, that didn't happen last year, but it's definitely happened in the past. It's called winning the double. What they call it. So maybe LeBron would want to win the double this year and get the Lakers to the title and win the, I don't know. They could name it after Kobe, right? You're not going to, you know, they named the trophy after Kobe, though. I think they'll fight hard for that, I would think.
And it seems like when stuff like this comes out to this degree, it seems like it's a foregone conclusion. Like it seems it's going to happen.
Silver's been pushing it for a while. I mean, I think pre-pandemic, this was talked about being implemented for this season. Mm-hmm. It's about to start in a couple of days. Like it was supposed to be part of the 75th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken. But obviously the pandemic threw that layoff schedule. So I think we're a couple years away from this, but I just think it would be really fun. And yeah, I'm a full supporter.
Brandon, I'm sold. How about you?
I hate to be like old man yelling at the clouds or like get off my lawn type of thing. Maybe I'm too much of a traditionalist and old school. I get it. I'm all about more basketball. I'm all about new innovations and it'll be fun. And I'm sure I would watch it and be excited and get into it, but I'm kind of like, we have this thing that we're fighting for every season and that's the goal. And then all of a sudden it's kind of like, does that lessen the NBA title? Is it like, now you got two things that you're shooting for, two banners you're shooting for? I'm like, oh, well the Bucks are saying they won the tourney. So they're the champs of that. So they're the best team. But then the Nets won the NBA title. So it's just kind of weird and it's kind of weird. It's kind of like, okay, we have this title, but here's this other title you can go for. It's just kind of odd to me. It'd be like in the middle of the NFL season being like, okay, we're going to have a little tournament and you win a title, but really you want to win the Super Bowl. We've already like doing this weird, you know, playing thing where you like have a playoffs before the playoffs to get into the playoffs. I don't know. I guess I'm old man yelling at the clouds, but pass.
Let me clarify. So In soccer, and it's not just England. All the different nations, like Germany, Italy, they all have their own leagues. They all have their domestic schedule, which is the regular season, and they all have their cups, right? Their tournaments. They're all called something different, but those cups are not as important and not as prestigious as winning the league title. It's not on the same level, but it is something that you can kind of like, if you finish fifth or whatever in England, which I think Leicester City did last year, they finished fifth or sixth, but they beat Chelsea to win the FA Cup. Like that's something you can hang your hat on. That's a cool deal for those fans. And highly competitive soccer in a historic venue that everybody watched. And I do think it's something that could be replicated in the NBA.
Sounds like a good time to me, to be honest. Sounds like a lot of memes as well.
I'm going to be fully in. Oh, yeah. I mean, every game would be, maybe not every game, but, you know, a lot more nationally televised games. Like, all, you know, all the rivalries would still be there. Like, if you're replacing 10 regular season games with this, like, I would think that this tournament is going to have a little higher intensity than the games that we see in February and March every year. Right? Like those games for the most part don't matter for 75% of the league.
Yeah. So
I don't see a ton of downside to at least trying it. And obviously Adam Silver wants it, and the league is going to be trying to come up with ways to replace this revenue that they lost because of the pandemic. But I don't know. I'm excited about the idea. I think they can come up with a way to make it work for everybody. And it's probably, you know, $1 million a player to the champion. And I don't know. I think it's going to be a good deal.
The other side of it is, oh, look, the Nets won a cup and a title. Cool. Or if it was a few years ago, oh, look, the Warriors won a cup and a title. Cool. Like in basketball, it's a little bit like the best teams are the best teams. And I'm not saying that it would happen each time. I don't know. It gets kind of convoluted to me when you're like giving out cups and you're giving out titles. And then all of a sudden, oh, how many times do we got to praise, you know, the Nets or the Lakers or the, you know, to me, it's like, it's not like the Thunder or the Grizzlies are going to come out of nowhere and win these cups. You know what I mean? Like we're still rewarding the best teams and the best players. And like LeBron's just getting an extra million. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm like,
I don't know. Cause like LeBron is probably somebody that would not take this tournament super seriously. Right. But like Damian Lillard sure would. Like what if the Blazers, when they made the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago, would have won a midseason tournament that, you know, had some value. Like that would have been cool. Like, Blazers have won one title in 75 years. Like,
no,
they get to hang a banner.
That's not how social media works. I tell you exactly what happened. Every comment under the thing, like, still haven't won a title. Oh, you just win cups. You don't win titles. You win cups. Like, you know what I'm saying? Well, like,
at least they won a title. I mean, they're already saying that about Portland. Dame's not going to win a title. Like, the people said that about Giannis, right? Like, and no, I don't think like this version of Oklahoma City or this version of Memphis is going to win it this year. But like those teams in the mid 2010s, when those teams were rolling, like one of those teams easily could have won a tournament like this that, you know, I mean, shoot, maybe, I don't know, who knows what the format's going to be, right? Like, but let's say you have to win, maybe there's, you know, three or four games in a span of a couple weeks where you have to win, you know, a couple games to make it to the next round, something like that. And let's say, you know, say Kevin Durant is hurt for those two games. Okay, well, now the Thunder are out. The Thunder are going to be the one seed in the West playoffs, but they didn't even make the quarterfinals of this tournament, right? Like, you know, or it could be LeBron, or it could be somebody that, you know, is going to be a heavy favorite or a contender for the title, but because of the way the schedule fell, it becomes a little bit more unpredictable. Maybe that's not a good argument. I kind of was talking myself out of that as I kept going. That's a bad angle. Bad job by me. But I want to see this in action. And you know what? I think I mentioned the Elam ending earlier. I think they could do not for if it's going to count as a regular season game too, but they could try that. You know, for this tournament, have this tournament be an Elam ending. I think that would be interesting to watch. No. No, but no takers.
I love the Elam ending. I love the Elam ending. I think Brandon's completely out. All right.
Well, Brandon, when you're covering the 2026 Thunder that are hanging a Bill Russell cup,
that's the thing.
Opening night, and you're like, oh man, this is so much fun. What a great atmosphere. I'm going to pull up this podcast and be like, you didn't even want this to happen.
That's the thing. Right? Brandon's going to have Brandon's going to have to go to these games.
Yeah. No, if that happens, Spencer, I'm burning these tapes and these copies. I'm like, I was all about it from the beginning. I was on day one. These are great.
All right. We will be regularly recording. We will probably not be back after every game, but we will keep you posted on our recording schedule. You will get at least two a week. We'll probably start there, but we'll keep you posted on our recording schedule for sure. So you know when these are coming out. And yeah, guys, thanks so much for doing this. It's been too long.
Absolutely. Glad to be back. Looking forward to the season. It's gonna be
absolutely
fun.
And we will definitely be recording after the first game for sure.
I was gonna say I'm excited to be talking to you guys after Shea hits another game winner on Wednesday night.
Yeah. All right. Thanks to both of you, and thanks to everybody who's listening. We will we'll talk to you soon. This is the Daily Thunder Podcast.
Hey Hoopheads, we appreciate you listening to this episode of Daily Thunder. Be sure to check out other NBA pods on the Hoopheads Podcast Network, including Cavalier Central, Nuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Spanning the Spurs, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, At the Buzzer, and Lakers Fast Break. There are also coaching-focused podcasts, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachesMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and Courtside Culture. Oh, and don't forget the network's flagship, the Hoopheads podcast, hosted by Mike Klinzing and Jason Sunkel, and featuring the best minds in the game, from its grassroots to the NBA.